Hi, and welcome to my podcast, Pure Happy Healthy. I'm your host, Leandra Haupt, model, entrepreneur, coach, and hypnotherapist. And I'm here to bring you more mindfulness in all areas of your life. Each week, I'll have a different focus on my show. Mindful Me, Mindful Model, Mindful Mensch, and Mindful Master Sessions. Thank you so much for being here and showing up to become the best version of yourself possible. Today I got a special surprise for you, as it is Advent. I don't even know if that exists in every country, but it's basically the weeks before Christmas. I got a special Christmas edition for you. So each Monday until Christmas, I will release a special show, and it will be in the month of the powerful, mindful model. So today I got an interview with a very special mindful model, Janice Summer, and she lives in London and is just that super, super beautiful woman, so strong. And I cannot wait to share this amazing episode with you. And yeah, so let's get started. Today I'm in the interview with a fellow model. Her name is Janice Summer. And I'm super happy and grateful to have you here in the conversation with me today. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so cool. So my first question to my guest is always, what did you have for breakfast this morning?
So I always have the same thing for breakfast every day. Bit of Greek yogurt, some chia seeds, some oats, and a bit of fruit. So that's what I had today as well.
Wow, sounds delicious. I find it so interesting that most people I know have the same breakfast every single morning. But if I would tell someone that I would have the same lunch or the same dinner every single day for years, people would probably think I'm crazy. But in terms of breakfast, we really tend to have the same one every day. Isn't that weird somehow?
I guess maybe it's just one less thing to think about when you start your day. So you know what you're going to have. You don't have to waste any mental energy about thinking of what you want to eat. And I mean, I like to eat different things for lunch and dinner all the time, but my flatmate, for example, she eats the same salad every day for lunch. And then I'm like, how? Don't you get bored? She's like, well, no, I go through phases. So I have maybe 3 months of my crayfish salad, and then I'll switch to a chicken salad. And basically, he just likes that it like keeps this routine for her. So I guess it's the same, but most people, yeah, for breakfast.
Yeah, I kind of can relate to that. I have phases as well. Sometimes I have my zucchini phase, then I have my broccoli phase. So I would eat for weeks everything with broccoli, but prepared in different ways. And then I get sick of it, and then my zucchini phase starts or something like this. So I kind of understand that concept, but yeah, it's interesting how different people are in terms of eating. But before we get really started, I would like to know, who is Janice? What makes you, and what are you currently working on?
Okay, so I'm Janice. I'm half German, half Singaporean. I grew up mostly in Germany, but I spent some time living in China, in Scotland. Now I'm living in London, in the UK. And since 2 years, I've been working as a model, which is very, very late, actually, to start as a model compared to most others that I know. I started off after university, where I studied politics and economics. I worked in finance for a couple of years in London, then worked for an NGO in Vienna, then worked in communications consulting in Munich. And when I left that last communications job, I just knew that I wanted a change, and I didn't really know what. And I thought I would go more into these kind of social impact directions. So I was thinking about working with startups that have some kind of a social mission. And I was looking for ways to get into that industry in Germany. There are a few venture capital funds that work in this direction, but not a lot. So I said I'd take my time to slowly find my way into that world. And while I was doing that, I thought I need to earn a little bit of money on the side. And I had been scouted for modeling several times when I was younger. I had done a little bit of freelance modeling when I was living in Beijing. And at university fashion show, like these like silly little things. But I never had properly signed with an agency. So I went into Munich Models in Munich. And yeah, they signed me. And then I thought, okay, this is fun. I'll see how it goes. I wasn't expecting to do it very long. I thought maybe it will be 3 to 6 months until I find my next job. And then it will just have been a fun experience. I even kind of doubted whether I would be accepted as a model, being 27 when I started. But it turned out to be really, really fun. And I kind of unexpectedly discovered this whole creative world that I had never really allowed myself to be a part of before. And obviously, I mean, as you know, Leandra, modeling has many, many frustrating aspects to it as well. But it does give you a lot of freedom to explore things that you care about. And for me, it kind of moved in two directions. So on one hand, I realized that coming into the modeling industry late and having come from a more corporate background where you have relationships with your colleagues, where you have kind of career progression support, all of these things are kind of missing in the modeling industry. And I thought it's a huge pity that that's not something that is provided by the industry itself. And I was very lucky to meet a girl called Anya Campbell, who's the co-founder of a group called Model Mafia in New York. She started it together with Cameron Russell, and they basically started a movement, a community of models that are all working together to make the world a more just and equitable and sustainable place, kind of changing the fashion industry from within. So I met Anya when she was in London, and we decided to bring Model Mafia to London. So I basically left Munich after half a year, moved to London, got an agency here, and at the same time co-founded the London branch of Model Mafia with Anya and a couple of other girls. So we started that. And at the same time, I discovered really a passion for sustainability in the modeling industry. In the fashion world, to be honest, not in the modeling industry. So it's a combination of trying to make the modeling industry a fairer, better, and more supportive place. And at the same time, thinking about how, as models, we have a platform to speak about things that we care about and to use that platform to speak about sustainability and how the industry can be changed. So these are kind of my main themes. I'm just starting my own podcast, which is very exciting now to be interviewed on a podcast. And that will be coming out soon. It's all about sustainable fashion, interviews with entrepreneurs in the sustainable fashion industry. And yeah, that's basically, I mean, as all models, I have a lot of different projects going at the same time. I'm working with a creative agency that is all female run. We do productions for brands, different videos, ad campaigns. So it's exciting also to see the modeling industry from the other side, so from the production side, which is quite cool. And yeah, that's me. That was a long, long story.
Wow, and such an interesting story. I think it's so cool that you come from a such totally different background, and your life took kind of randomly these turns, and you just like went into it and just saw what it brought up for you, and you just completely went with it. But I can imagine now, I mean, I have a similar story to you, maybe starting modeling quite late and having done different things before, like studying and worked in an agency and stuff like this, and as a photographer myself. So people sometimes think, why did you go to modeling? Like, if you could do so much more, thinking that modeling is something like a something for stupid people or something if you don't know any other job to do, then you would go to modeling if you look good somehow. So was that something also that you heard a lot? Like, why don't you go back to corporate if you've studied already and if you've worked there, you could make so much money with that. Why do you do modeling? Is that something that you encounter a lot?
Yeah, absolutely. All the time. I mean, I even encounter it from my own family. Kind of, you know, Janice, this has been an interesting adventure, but when are you going to get a normal job again? These kind of things. And I even have these conversations with myself in my own mind about, I mean, I think being able to work as a model is a huge privilege. It's something that we should be thankful for, but not taken for granted. And I think that if we as models see that we're not just a face, not just a blank canvas. We are, of course, a blank canvas in a way that that makes you a model, because you're embodying something, you're telling somebody else's story, and you're, in some way, you're selling this dream of whatever the designer wants the clothing to represent. But you also have your own voice. And I think now, especially in this time of social media, we all have our own platform and we can use that to speak about things. So I think it, like as with many things in life, it's very much about what you make out of the position that you're in. And I get so frustrated sometimes when it's like, oh, you know, get confirmed for a job one day before. How can I plan my life around that? Or, you know, having made plans with friends and then having to cancel because you've been booked on a job, or maybe just not earning any money for 2 months, like zero, and your friends who are not working as models, they just don't understand that. So there are always these uncertainties and questions, but in terms of this statement, like modeling being a thing for stupid people and why would one do such a thing, I think it doesn't have to be. It can be if you choose to let yourself be just kind of drifting with the current and the waves of this industry, but you can also use it to make a difference and to talk about things and to have people listening to you. But it's the weirdest thing to me. So I'm not really a big, no, don't have a lot of Instagram followers. So I'm not the kind of person who I would expect people would listen if I have something to say. But I found, even though it's only been 2 years, that for some reason people are interested. Maybe it's this combination of having like an interesting aesthetic pictures and at the same time not only focusing on the pictures but saying something else like in addition to that. That combination, for some reason, people find it interesting. I find it fascinating when I realize that there are people who actually read every single thing that I write and then like talk to me about it and start interesting discussions. I find it fascinating.
Yeah, I think especially as you said, in the times now that we all have a platform, you stand for something. And I also think that in terms of the modeling industry, we're going to a direction where just that perfect symmetric baby doll face has become boring and outranged. And I think we're looking for interesting people with interesting stories now. And therefore, we are not that blank canvas anymore, but we get a voice and we transport a message with who we are and what we represent. And therefore, it has changed a lot in the past years, I think, and therefore our job is so important because we have a voice and we also stand for something. Might it be flaws that suddenly, maybe a skin condition that suddenly comes into public and that we speak about, or maybe having a cultural diverse background like you, that this is coming up to fashion now and we can always see from models what we like and what we consider beautiful. We can know where our societies are going in terms of beauty ideals, but also in terms of relevant topics that are up to come in society. And I think the topic of having beauty in all kind of looks, no matter where you're from, what your look is like, what your skin color is like, what your flaws are. Flaws, I don't like that word, but you know what I mean. And I think this is coming more into public now, and I think this is a really, really beautiful development. But as you said before, you were, or both of us are, quite old for modeling. Do you see age also as something that will get included more and more in the fashion industry, or is that something still where people are reacting kind of weird when you tell them their real, your real age?
I think that it's definitely moving in this direction. I think it all belongs in the same movement about presenting people as people and as who they really are. And, you know, if you're selling clothing to a woman, but it's being modeled by a girl, why would the woman feel that this is speaking to her and that this is what she will want to wear, what represents her? So I think in all of these movements, it's all about representation, and you just want to have the consumer, customer, looking at whatever aspirational photo they're presenting in the fashion industry, but to feel like they can identify themselves with it. So I think generally with age, it is going in that direction. I'm hoping that it continues that way. Personally speaking, though, when I tell people my own age, they say something like, "Ah, but you're so lucky because you're Asian. You will look young anyway." Which is this funny mixture of, you know, yeah, maybe it's true, but also it's like associating something with my race, which is, you know, in this case, it's not an offensive thing at all. But why would I be saying, "Oh, I'm lucky because I'm Asian and therefore I look young and that allows me to do this work"? I would prefer somebody to say, "Well, it's great that the world is becoming more representative and that your lifespan as a model isn't short just because you're no longer in your mid-20s. I think it's a great time to be modeling for these changes. I think it's really, really something to be thankful for.
Yes. You said that... people said that to you on set about your Asian background. Did you have to struggle in your jobs with racism before and other occasions? And did you also have some negative experiences generally on set with the team or modeling in general?
It's interesting, this topic of racism, because it became so present this year. With the whole George Floyd situation and Black Lives Matter and everything that came after. And I personally, I find it interesting. So I will go first on my personal experience and then on like a bigger picture that I've seen through the model mafia community, especially. On my personal experience, I've never really had a direct negative experience of racism within my own modeling experience. But in fact, 2020 was the first time that I really felt racism outside of modeling, because when the whole coronavirus was starting, everybody only knew it comes from China. So at the time, I think it was end of January, I was in Munich for a job, and I was on the subway. And there was a lady who kept on looking over at me, because obviously I look Asian, and even though I'm half, I think I look more Asian than European. She kept on looking over, and then she was sitting down, and she just moved one seat across, and she was wearing a turtleneck jumper, and she rolled it up to cover her nose and faced away from me. I was like, "Wow, really? This is insane." And this happened to me again, where somebody was also on the subway and just kind of like walked. This, it was hilarious. This woman, she like walked sideways, kind of like a crab, to be as far away from me as possible. And then she ran out of the door. And I was just like, "Wow, this is really, really bizarre." So that was that was the 2020 experience of racism in that sense. Quite shocking to see how kind of closed-minded some people can be. In terms of modeling, I've only ever had it in situations where I'm being cast on job, for example, where the theme is clearly diversity. So they're looking for one black model, one Asian model, one white model, or maybe sometimes it's three white models, but then you have the signature black model and the signature Asian model, which is fine because I think it's great that there's more more inclusivity in general. And I think that you need to take small steps of like having the token Asian, token black girl before you can get into a direction where that's more the status quo. But sometimes it's like, oh, you know, we've already casted somebody who's Asian, so we don't need to add another Asian, but then you have three blonde girls. So that's something, I don't know, but I think it's fine. And I myself am very, very, very thankful in a way, because being Asian has given me a lot of opportunities for quite big brands to want to work with me, because the Asian market is so big and the consumers there, they want to see themselves represented, but they also like the Western kind of beauty ideal. So I've found myself quite lucky to be on some bigger campaigns that have been all around Asia. And then this year during lockdown, I obviously never saw it myself, but I was sent pictures by friends in Hong Kong that I was like on a bus, extra sized on a bus and like a billboard. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a difficult thing, and I've never experienced it in a specifically horrible negative way. But I found it really fascinating, as I was saying, with Model Mafia. It's a community of models who also care about other things and talk about other things. And there has been just a lot of situations of the girls using their platforms to speak out about their experiences. And there are some things in terms of just implicit racism within the fashion industry that I never knew and never realized. For example, a lot of black girls will be requested in advance before going on a job to do their hair in a certain way. So either to get it weaved or to leave it free. And depending on how it was before, it's something that they have to do on their own expense to have their hair in a certain way. Whereas all the other models, they come in and they just get their hair done, and they have stories of the hairstylist saying like, oh, your hair is really difficult to work with, or even shades of makeup, to that it's not completely to be expected that a makeup artist will have every shade of every color, or stories about girls hearing from a photographer, oh, your skin is too black, it's hard to light it in a way that like makes me see your features. And it's all these things that are just inherently unfair, and now at least people are speaking out about it. And hopefully by speaking out about these things, one can make a change in a positive direction. But the fact that this is even the case in the first place, it's just so unfair. And I mean, there are a lot of really incredible girls within our group who've said some powerful stuff. One of them is Ebony Davis. She is absolutely stunning model, and she has even given a talk about her experiences of racism, which I would really recommend. Then there's another girl called Sinead Bovell. She's started a company on the side giving advice about advancements in technology, artificial intelligence, the way that technology is changing all of our lives, and providing tools for young people to educate themselves as technology develops. And she has done this whole thing about implicit racial bias within algorithms and programming of different technological tools. So even if like an artificial intelligence program is learning from what it's seen before, you need to make sure that the people who are working on the team and who are coding these programs are a diverse team. So not only diverse in terms of race, but also in terms of gender, to just bring all of these things in. And I find it absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I think the Model Mafia is such an amazing platform. I learned about it from you, actually, telling me about it. And I investigated. And unfortunately, in Berlin, we do not have a group, but I connected with some of the girls online and I follow all their messages, all their mails. And yeah. It's just such an amazing, supportive community. And I think it's so beautiful and having the support from so many smart and women who stand up for themselves and talk about certain problems also in the industry. And you were saying in the beginning also that the whole modeling industry, of course, gives you so many opportunities to live a really, really good life. And it's you're really grateful for it. And I can just, it really resonates with me that I'm really grateful to be able to do this job. And it has a lot of positive aspects, but it also has a lot of downsides. And we were already speaking about a few of them. And what are the biggest downsides of modeling in terms for you and your experience?
So for me, the hardest thing is the unpredictability, both in terms of everyday time management and planning, but also in terms of income. So especially for me, going from a corporate job where I knew what I was getting in my bank account every single month, to this crazy situation where it's like, sometimes within 2 days, you might earn what you could have earned in your old job in half a year, but then you might earn nothing for 2 months. So you always have to budget with this idea that you might not get anything for a while. Then it's also like, for me at least, it was transitioning from being an employee to being a freelancer. So learning things about taxes and about like all of the other expenses that you have as a freelancer, especially in Germany when you're paying all of your health insurance contributions by yourself, and all of this stuff is an interesting challenge to learn. But really, I think the hardest part is this whole time management. And I found the difference between working in the UK and working in Germany. My German agents are very more kind of, they tell me more in advance about options and what might be coming up. Whereas in the UK, it's just the way that it works over here. I usually get told only the day before what I'm going to do the next day. And then sometimes I'll check my email in the evening and something will have come in and it's like, oh, Janice, you need to be on a train to Bristol at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. And that really takes some getting used to. And it's a question that I've always asked myself, I've discussed with other models. We just don't really understand, because if you look at the production side of things, and I'm seeing that now with my work with the creative agency, amazing group of women as well, by the way, they're called Female Narratives, and they're completely female-run creative agency. So when we're planning shoots for our clients through that group, we have a whole process that we go through, from coming up with the idea, casting the models, doing the styling, planning the actual shoot day, organizing photographer, videographer, locations, all of these things. And the decision on who the model is going to be is very much part of that process. So it is clear a while before who the model is going to be. But at the same time, from the agency side, you just get confirmed the day before. And I just don't understand what changes within that week, 2 weeks before the actual job happens, that you're only able to inform the model the day before. Because it takes away your power as a model, as a person, to plan your own life. It gives that power to somebody else, and you have to adjust yourself around it, and it makes it really hard to have other jobs along the side to maybe support yourself in other ways, because you have to be flexible. And then if you have to cancel on things all the time, it's not just a bad situation and when you have to cancel on your friends, but if you're trying to do another job and then you have to cancel, you become, you know, less reliable and then therefore less respected for what you do. And that just seems like a very unfair dynamic to me. So that's something that I find really very frustrating about the modeling industry.
Yes, I know this from my modeling experience as well. And I think it just reflects what people think of models, and it kind of shows the hierarchy that is still behind that, that the model is really the lowest piece in the whole wheel, even though I, in my opinion, we're just as part of the team as everyone else, because without us, the job cannot get done. And therefore,
exactly.
I'm also pledging, and I think that's why it's so powerful to have structures like Model Mafia or your female, what is it called, the female corporate?
It's called Female Narratives.
Female Narratives, where women get together and actually stand up for being a model and being a human and wanting to be treated like everyone else. And this is also my motivation for this podcast, for example, speaking with other models, because I think it's so important to show this side of modeling as well and giving models a voice, because there are so many beautiful, intelligent, smart models out there, and unfortunately this is not seen from society a lot. So what was your experience with fellow models, besides me of course, as I'm freaking amazing, with other models that you met along your way? Did you also have the experience that they were really, really amazing people, or yeah, what kind of modeling, fellow model experiences did you make in your journey?
I think I have been incredibly lucky. So before you enter the modeling industry, you have this preconception about things being so competitive and girls being really bitchy and just a lack of support very much. But I have had the completely opposite experience. So I think particularly as I was involved with Model Mafia very early on, and the whole concept behind it is creating that sense of community, and maybe also because I was part of the leading team setting that up, we were very much actively seeking out people who have the same mindset and who believe in support. And yeah, I don't know. I never really had any kind of bad experiences with fellow models at all. And one of the other things that I've found incredibly useful when I first started, you get thrown into this industry and you don't get any instructions. So, for example, I was told to make a self-tape for a casting, and this was the first time that I ever even heard about a self-tape. I didn't know what I was supposed to do. And then again, to this context of being at a time where technology gives us so much education, self-education even, I just Googled it. I was like, how do I make a modeling self-casting tape? And then I found a blog by a model in London who had some articles exactly about this, and I was like, wow, this is great. And then I saw that this girl had a friend who had written a book called The Model Manifesto, which is, she subtitled it, An Anti-Exploitation Guide for Models. And it went into all of these topics about things that you just need to know if you're starting as a model, but you don't know because nobody's there to teach you. And so I met the author of this book. Her name's Leanne Maskell. When I came to London as well, she was also involved in the Model Mafia. And basically, it's just been a very productive community. And I hear this from models that I've met who've been modeling for much longer than I have, 10 years or more, that this is something that has changed quite recently, this getting more of the sense of community. But I guess I've been very lucky because that's all I've known so far. Hopefully it stays that way.
Yeah, so beautiful. Maybe it just shows that lots of models are like this, very supportive and very beautiful people. In my experience, I can just say the same. It's very rare that I met someone where I had a bad feeling of very unfair competition or very mean girls that like to fight. I almost never really had that. So yeah, so beautiful. I would like to move on to some quick round of fire questions. So you just give me the first answer that comes in your mind. What is beauty for you?
Beauty to me is accepting your flaws. And it's very hard.
Wow, I love that. That's so beautiful. Cool. What can we do for a better health today?
I think fulfilling some basic requirements, so what you put into your body, so good nutrition, as much home-cooked food as possible, and also moving your body, so doing whatever sport suits you, I think, not necessarily forcing yourself to do some crazy workout routine, but to just move your body every day, take a walk, do some yoga, some meditation, just things that make you feel comfortable in your body, not focused on the outside of how it makes your body look, but about how inside it makes you feel. And then I think that really translates into how it looks from the outside.
Yeah, exactly. And then we're with the beauty again.
Exactly.
then it is your beauty. What's your favorite dish, talking about food?
Oh, that's such a difficult question. I love food.
Chicken salad or joining your flatmate for the chicken salad? Or
well, I think my go-to dinner on a given night is something really simple, like maybe a salmon baked in the oven, some vegetables, and then something on the side, maybe some couscous, quinoa, maybe some rice. Sometimes I go my full Asian route and do like a Asian chicken curry or something like this. But yeah, basic. I think the thing that I eat most is salmon.
Salmon? Mm-hmm. Salad or salmon?
Salmon.
Okay, yeah. What is the place that feels most like home to you?
Ooh, I don't really have that. I don't really have a place that feels like home. I think a home to me is always about the people. So I have amazing friends here in London, which is why I keep getting drawn back to London. I also have my family in Germany, but it's not associated with a place as such because I just spend a lot of time moving around different places. So it's about people that make me feel home.
Oh, I love that answer. What is a book or a movie or a podcast that was a game changer for you?
There are quite a few in different directions. So let's stick with podcasts since both of us are making podcasts and are into podcasts.
Yay.
One podcast that I really love is called How to Fail with Elizabeth Day. It's basically just about refocusing things that you may have considered failures and seeing the lessons that you learn out of it for life, which I think is just very powerful and can be applied to everybody. Then in terms of game changing in the direction of career, as I said, my podcast is about sustainable fashion and also about entrepreneurship. And I kind of see it as a combination of two podcasts that I really love. One of them is How I Built This with Guy Raz, which is a series of interviews with very, very big entrepreneurs who've been incredibly successful. So the second podcast is called Wardrobe Crisis with Claire Press. So Claire Press is a sustainability editor. She used to work for Vogue and started this incredible podcast where she interviews lots of different players in the fashion industry, who are trying to make it a more sustainable place. And those are basically the two kind of business related podcasts that have really influenced me. Oh, and an amazing book that I love is called Let My People Go Surfing. It's by the founder of Patagonia, which has been very inspirational to me in terms of looking at the fashion industry and what can be changed in terms of sustainability.
Cool. I'm excited to check them out. What can we do for more self-love today?
I think that goes all the way back to the question on beauty. I think it's about not seeking perfection. And I think for me, this has been a really big personal challenge because I've always been quite perfectionist and I've always cared too much about the opinions of other people and doing things that I felt other people would expect me to do. So I think my journey, and I'm nowhere near close, I'm a far way away from it, but it's really learning to accept one's flaws and not seeking this perfection because it doesn't even exist. I mean, everybody has their issues and some people talk about them, some people don't, and I think it's actually helpful to talk about them and to not always try to present this perfect picture to the outside because it's not real.
Yeah, and I think we are on a really good way in terms of the fashion and beauty industry at the moment to bring people with their flaws in the spotlight and accepting them also in the broader picture. So yeah, thank you for sharing that. And it was so beautiful speaking and connecting with you. And thank you for everything that you shared here. It was an honor to have you on Pure Happy Healthy.
I loved it. Thank you so much.